This is The End User, episode 131 for Tuesday, April 9th, the wildest of the Wild West. Hello and welcome to The End User, the show where we get together and talk about our experience with consumer technology with a bit of news from your perspective. The End User.
It's the tech news that you can use.
I'm your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I'm Futurist Prime, Taylor Marr.
We had a pretty healthy week of news. It crept up on me, though. I thought there was nothing, and then when I went to actually look, there was actually quite a bit.
Well, we knew last week that on Thursday there was going to be a big Facebook announcement, but we didn't know what it was. Now we know what it is. It's an Android experience, I guess. It's more than an app, but it's less than a whole phone. And they're calling it Facebook Home, by which they mean, I guess, home screen, because it sort of takes over your whole phone. And puts all of your Facebook updates front and center.
Yeah, more or less. It's basically their version of an Android launcher. And I think this is really interesting from a user experience standpoint. They're achieving some very interesting things. I'm not sure I want all of this tied into Facebook, but I kind of like what they're doing with it.
Well, what would you rather have it tie into?
Well, I'd rather have it tie into whatever I want it to tie into, you know, like Google Chat and all that kind of stuff.
Doesn't Google already do that with Android?
Well, yes, but it's not quite as integrated like this is with Facebook. You know, like the Facebook messaging experience on this phone is fantastic looking. They call them chat heads, which is interesting, but it's like somebody's little face pops up and it gets docked to the left or right or top or bottom of the screen. And no matter where you go on the phone, your chats stay persistent on the sides or top and bottom of the phone. So you can always get back to these things. So that's a little bit more integrated than using notifications or something like that to tie into those services.
So I had a hard time really understanding chat heads, and I didn't see any videos or anything of how it worked. But is it basically just like having a little chat window on your phone as you do other things?
Right. So it's hard to explain over audio, and to really get it, you have to kind of see the video. And there was a long video in the link in the show notes to off to The Verge. But it's – so you have this little face that you dock to the left or right of the phone. And then you click on that face to get a message box to talk to them. And then that face, that little face icon, is persistent no matter where you go on the phone. So it's docked, essentially, no matter what
app
you open.
Or you can, and I do remember reading this, you can just flick it away and it'll disappear.
Right, yeah, you can flick it downward, kind of like into the trash, if you will. And you flick it downward and then it does actually go away.
So not only did they announce this this app home screen, lock screen experience thing with chat heads and whatnot. Oh, there's a whole new vocabulary that you have to learn. They also announced a flagship phone that's going to ship with this built in. It's from HTC, and they're calling it the first, which is hilarious to me. It's like an internet comment troll.
Yeah, HTC just says first. And they've already got the one, so I guess it's not their only phone, but yeah, they've got the first now. But it's really interesting. This has shades of the pre. It's very gesture oriented, and I think that the ideas are very interesting. But like I said, I don't know if I want to pour all of that into Facebook.
Yeah, but lots of people do already, right? Yeah. I mean, Facebook has over a billion active users. I'm sure they've got some very large number of people who are just as comfortable, if not more comfortable, with giving their information to Facebook than Google or anybody else.
Yeah, absolutely true. I just wish that I had some options. But yeah, you're right. I feel like most end users kind of live in Facebook. That's like, you know, tab one is Facebook with Facebook chat and that kind of thing.
Right. It's either Facebook or Gmail.
So it's interesting. They took the lock screen and made it so that there's a little charm that you flick off to the side like you're used to, kind of like the pre-worked. You know, you have this puck and you throw it off the screen, and depending on which direction you throw it in, it does different things. So if you throw it up, for example, it will give you the their launcher, which has apps that you pin. And there's no widgets on this home screen. So you can pin these apps. I think of it kind of like Windows Phone, if Windows Phone didn't have live tiles, is kind of a decent way to describe it. So you can pin your apps to this home screen, and the ones that you use more often are you can pin there, and then the ones that you don't use more often, you swipe to the left, and you get all of your applications with a little search bar, not unlike the iPhone.
Yeah, they've obviously taken some cues from Windows Phone 8 with this, but it's amazing how they've created this third-party software that reinvents the way that you approach your Android phone. I mean, they changed the whole interface from the moment that you turn the phone on.
Yeah, it's definitely very interesting. Like I said, I think this would be super powerful if it just weren't from Facebook. I agree. I know we're in the tech bubble. I get that, but they would really have a platform to fly on if they were to tease this apart from all of the Facebook services and allow people to tie into it. You know, maybe that's in the future. I mean, it's called the HTC First. It's their first release. It's the first release of the software. So, you know, maybe they'll offer up some APIs or something if it's successful, which I'm...
Yeah,
I don't
so
know
let's
if it will
talk
be.
About this phone for a second. It's not all just about... Facebook Home, but there's a new phone that was announced. So, give us the highlights.
Well, it's a pretty nondescript Android phone. It's got the typical menu and home button and the back button. So, and it's made by HTC. It's kind of bubbly. In fact, it's kind of thick looking to me. I didn't see exactly how thick it was, but it looks pretty nice.
How big is the screen?
Let's see. It's a little smaller than the other ones. Let me find it here. 4.3
inches. 4.3
inches.
Yes. So that's a good size to you, right? I have a 4-inch phone. You have how big is your phone now?
It's the same. So right. I say it's a little bit small just because it's small compared to the ridiculous Android phones that are
right.
out there.
It's definitely small for an Android phone that gets its own launch event.
Yeah.
But it's going to be selling for $100 on contract. In fact, it will not be available unlocked anywhere in the world at launch. You have to pay for a 2-year contract.
So no T-Mobile in that case?
Right. And so that 4.3-inch screen is a 720p LCD display.
Right. So that screen is basically the same screen that's on my 8X. So if that's the case, it is likely to look pretty good.
And in the U.S., it'll be available April 12th on AT&T, and it does have LTE.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see what all of the non-techies think about this, because I almost don't care what the tech media has to say about this, because I know that they're going to be wrong when it comes to the seriously mass market that Facebook holds.
Well, so the other question is, because I don't imagine a lot of people are going to go out and buy this phone, is what other phones will you be able to get Facebook Home on? And it's only a handful of phones. I think the Nexus 4, the Galaxy S3 and S4 are on that list. The LG Optimus G1.
You're trying to keep track of Android handsets.
It's all just word soup to me.
Yeah, you should realize that this is impossible. We can only keep track of the most popular ones, I guess.
So basically only a handful of the very latest Android phones are getting it at launch. Although I bet we'll start to see customized root ROMs that people can install onto their phones from third-party sources.
Yeah, I bet that's true.
That'll be optimized for Facebook Home.
And like I said, I really hope that they build some kind of API around this, because I could really see this taking off. It takes Android and it gives it some structure. I think that idea is very interesting. Now,
is it? Because I think HTC Sense you'd really like, or maybe Samsung's skins on top. You know, remember when every manufacturer was putting their own skin versions of Android?
This seems a little bit different to me, because most of those skins, they took the basic Android and they put some stuff on top of it. Instead of, Facebook has really created something unique here. And they're not just literally putting a skin across Android. They've created something that is unique and that has its own gesture interface that's not available in regular Android. So I think we've got one instance of a skin kind of done right to me, except for the fact that it's only Facebook all the time.
Right, that's the problem.
Right.
Who wants their phone controlled by Facebook?
Yeah, so those people are out there, and we'll have to see if they actually go out and buy this phone. Because I know, again, the tech media, I don't think is savvy to the mass market that would kind of get this phone. And it'll be very interesting to see if it's successful or if it's a Microsoft kin kind of device.
Yeah, I hope it's not. But, I mean, it's not really a device now, is it? I mean, I think the main thing that's going to affect Facebook Home's popularity is the number of phones on which it's available.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. It's a launch device and a software platform. So last thing here, there are no widgets for the home screen. I think I mentioned that in passing, but it's worth mentioning that the home screen has no widgets. And depending on who you are, that could be a good thing, that could be a bad thing, but they are not there. But it does have all of the other Android stuff, like the notification blind and that kind of thing. They're all still there.
Well, I guess the idea is that your friends are your home screen widgets, right? Instead of just having things that take you to random pieces of information on the internet, you get the information that Facebook decides is valuable to you.
Sort of. Looking at the videos is very interesting because your friends are the lock screen, and you can interact with the lock screen in a way that you can interact with your friends. And then when you actually unlock it, it's just a launcher. So it's very weird. It's definitely, you got to go see the video to really comprehend. I'm not sure I can explain it in words on the podcast, 100% at least. But yeah, so you've got all of your friends and statuses and chats and everything is on the lock screen. And then when you actually unlock it, you get some extra stuff. So anyway.
That's how most phones work.
Well, no, it's like, so.
You need to unlock them to get the extra stuff.
So it's kind of like if you had Notification Center, but on the lock screen, solely dedicated to Facebook.
Well, you could hypothetically do that on an iPhone.
Yeah, what, with Root or something?
No, you could just turn off all the other notifications. You get lock screen notifications from Facebook.
Yeah. Now, so I don't know. It's quite interesting. We'll have to see where this goes, or if it goes anywhere.
Well, it'll go somewhere, but maybe not that far. I mean, the people who are buying these high-end Android phones aren't necessarily the people that Facebook wants to target for this software.
Yeah, that's certainly true. It's just kind of a launch device. And I mean, it is $100. That's half the typical going rate for a smartphone in the United States now on contract.
True, but it just came out. It's only one phone. It's only on one carrier. And it's not a flagship phone.
Yeah, no, it's not. Although the specs are still pretty crazy for it not being a flagship phone.
Yeah, for $100 on contract, it's a pretty good phone. It looks like it, especially if you really like Facebook. So I guess that's one way to go. But you're not going to get people onto your platform just by offering a pretty good phone for $100. I think Nokia learned that lesson with Windows Phone 7.
Yeah, and I think Microsoft learned that lesson with the kin in some way, right?
Microsoft has learned that lesson lots of times.
Many, many times over. All right. Well, something else that may or may not stick are bitcoins. We've got some bitcoins in the news, and I was a little reticent to talk about them, but I...
Yeah, we usually stay away from Bitcoin because we don't use it. Most people we know don't use it, and most end users aren't using it. I'm not sure who's using it. Hackers and drug dealers mostly. That's what people say. But if you have been using Bitcoin over the past 6 months or even the past 1 month, you are really in luck because it's at an all-time high value. In just over the month of March, It more than tripled in value from $33 to over $100. And it's been over $100 for the whole month of April so far. And at one point, it was up over $140. So bitcoins are gaining significantly in value. It's funny. If you look at this chart of market capitalization, there was a crash in Bitcoin about 6 months ago. But on this chart, it's nothing but a tiny bump.
Yeah, because they've grown so much. The crash seems really tiny by comparison, right?
Right. So Bitcoin is at an all-time high. It's clearly doing really well. But the thing is, a lot of other things have been happening, especially this week with Bitcoin, that makes me wonder why the value is so high. The first thing was one of the main Bitcoin banks called InstaWallet has shut down.
Yeah, so, they've shut down indefinitely, and it's because of hackers or something, right?
Well, yeah. So InstaWallet experienced a DDoS attack. So someone on the internet was attacking them,
right?
And they have suspended their service indefinitely. They might come back, but it doesn't look like it will. It would be financially impractical for them to completely redesign their entire software architecture. It would be cheaper just to refund people's money, probably.
Well, there's really nothing you can do about a DDoS other than handle it.
Right, and they were trying to handle it for a couple of days, but it was continuing and strengthening, and they decided to shut down their services.
Yeah, so see, I wonder if they're just waiting for people to cool off and then start back up once they're kind of out of the cycle, news and all of that.
That could totally be the case. And once the DDoS attacks turn off, maybe everything will go back to normal. But the other thing is that another one of the major Bitcoin banks, Coinbase, leaked almost all of their user data after a phishing attack.
Yikes, that is not good. So we've learned once again that new services are prone to security attacks. Surprise, surprise, right?
All right, but even if you don't use these banks, and even if you don't use Bitcoin, it might be affecting you as well, because there is a new phishing attack that is spreading over Skype that infects your computer and turns it into a Bitcoin mining machine. And money that your computer mines, by the way, cranking up your processor to 100% utilization, which heats up your computer and spikes your energy bill, all of those mined bitcoins then get sent to the hacker that designed the malware.
So wait, let's back up a little bit. So Bitcoin mining is a thing that if you have Bitcoin, you can become a Bitcoin miner by installing their software and basically running your CPU all the time to try to crack a puzzle. And if you are successful in cracking the puzzle, then you get 50 bitcoins for free. So that's how they basically print new money. That's how they inject money into the market. And at some point, I think it was like 2040 something, that was going to stop. And so what these guys have done, whoever these guys are, is create a kind of a malware of sort that will use Skype to infect you. They'll send you a Skype message. They will phish you. And when you click the link, they will infect you with this software that will mine bitcoins using your computer and your power and running your CPU at 100% so that they can reap the money that gets injected into the market. Does that make sense?
Right. It makes sense to me. I mean, I understood it all already, but I think you hit all the high notes. The main point being, if you're infected over Skype, these hackers are using your computer to make the most valuable currency in the world, and they keep it.
And they keep it. You solve the problem, they keep the money.
And they're taking that money from other people who could get it legitimately, because there's a limited amount.
Right. Yeah, because there will eventually be a limited amount. I don't know. Bitcoin is just fascinating. I'm sure even more so for you than for me, but it's kind of insane to have a kind of anonymous distributed currency with no government behind it. It kind of warps my mind a little bit.
Well, if you had only read one of these stories, you wouldn't have anywhere near a clear picture of what's been happening with Bitcoin the last few months. With all of them together, I'm still very confused. But if the only story that you had read was Bitcoin's at an all-time high, you should have bought it 6 months ago, my response to that is, well, there are a lot of strange things happening with Bitcoin. It's a new and scary place to be, which is, of course, a place where people sometimes make a lot of money.
Well, the internet in general is still kind of wild, wild west, isn't it? And, I mean, this is the wildest of the wild, wild west.
This is pretty wild. but that's all I have on Bitcoin for this week. We have a member of our chat room who's saying that Bitcoin is now up to $182 per Bitcoin.
Wow. That's really crazy. And we're going to see a bunch of fluctuation as this thing kind of matures. So it'll be very interesting to watch it and see if it sticks. I think we've hit critical mass, though. I think it's stuck.
It's stuck, meaning that this is as high as it's going to go, or it's not going to go away?
No, I don't mean the value of it. I mean it's not going to go away.
I was going to say, as someone with some training in economics, I was going to disagree with you, but there is no economics that prepares you for Bitcoin.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
It's a wholly new experiment. But my prediction is that something very big has yet to happen to Bitcoin.
Yeah, well, I'm not about to go invest all of my life savings into Bitcoin, but it certainly seems like it has struck a nerve in a way that some of the other competitors to Bitcoin have not.
It has struck something, that's for sure.
It struck gold.
Wait, there are competitors to Bitcoin?
Yeah, there's one called Litecoin. There's a couple of them.
The only one I know is Woofy, but that's fictional.
Is that the currency of the future?
According to Cory Doctorow.
Okay. I need to go read some Cory Doctorow. So we'll have to shut down the podcast right now so I can go read.
Okay. Well, let's just turn on the afterburners real fast so we can clear through the podcast quicker.
Yeah, we can do that. Fasten your seatbelt. Let's turn them on.
All right. Seatbelt fastened. Go.
So Sony has announced a media player that is rumored to be released this summer, and it's going to be $699, and it looks like a Roomba. So I'll be very interested to get the details about this, and I'm imagining that it's not going to clean my carpets.
It's probably smaller than a Roomba. It doesn't look like it has much carpet cleaning ability, and I'm glad that they at least put a flat top on it, so you know, yeah, you can stack it on things, unlike many of other Sony's set-top products. But in addition to that, they have lowered the prices on some of their flagship 4K TVs. Their 55-inch ultra-high-definition TV is going to be $5,000, and the 65-inch TV is going to be $7,000. And if you think that's steep, you should have listened to our show where I talk about their 84-inch ultra-high-definition TV that is still $25,000.
Yeah, still a lot of money, but it's the we're going to have a whole new round of arguments about viewing distance and resolution, so be prepared.
Oh, boy. Can't wait for that. So the radio streaming service Ardio, one of these competitors to Grooveshark and Spotify and Pandora, they are launching a video streaming service. Right now, it's only available to their audio streaming customers, and this one is called Vdio. Audio is just RDIO, and this one is VDIO. And it's basically the same as Amazon Prime or iTunes movie and TV store. The prices are pretty identical. The quality is pretty identical. You know, some things are higher, some things are lower. But if you are already subscribed to Ardio Premium and you live in the U.S. or the U.K. And you don't already have iTunes or Amazon Prime on your computer or your TV or something, then I guess give it a shot. But otherwise, it's not really worth it.
Yeah, it seems like to me this is their first step into the market, and it'll be a while before they mature. But it'll be good to have another competitor in this market, right?
long term, it will, but they're not going to get many subscribers if they don't offer something that their competitors don't have.
Right, right. It's a hard market to break into. I mean, you have to broker all those deals with the studios and all kinds of business things. You know, it's not something that you can just come up with a technical solution and roll it out.
Focus, Chris. We're in the afterburners.
Ah, right.
Now, one more tiny piece of news for the iPhone on T-Mobile. Two weeks ago, they announced that they were launching LTE in a bunch of markets and that they will be selling the iPhone off contract for $580. Now, if you are one of the people who has brought a third-party GSM iPhone to T-Mobile or were considering it, you can now get visual voicemail through T-Mobile and HSDPA or LTE if you have the iPhone 5. So you get faster data and visual voicemail along with HD voice technology, even if you bought an AT&T branded iPhone through an over-the-air update. But you have to have the phone unlocked by the carrier. Now, Yahoo is making some updates to their mail service. We reported a few months ago that they had redesigned everything and that it was way better. Now they're adding Dropbox, direct Dropbox into your mail. It might be nice if somebody emailed you something. You know, they email you an attachment and you could just put it right into your Dropbox. But you have to have Yahoo Mail.
Right. Now, I don't think this is going to bring them back from the edge, but it's good to see them integrate some other services. That's always good to see. SkyDrive has good integration to Outlook.com, so it's good to see them do this as well. So the HP chairman, Ray Lane, has stepped down amongst the other madness that has been happening at HP over the past 2 or 3 years, and this company is really shaking right now, aren't they?
Yeah, this is in relation to some financial discrepancies when they bought out a big data analysis firm called Autonomy, and they were apparently very sketchy anomalies, but I don't know what's going on at Hewlett-Packard. They seem to be really floundering, and that's why we mentioned this in the afterburners.
Yeah, they're just, you're right, floundering is the right word. They're just kind of, they seem aimless and keep screwing up in strange ways, so interesting.
And finally, we have a new technology on the market that I thought was interesting enough to mention. Random access memory, RAM, in computers has always been notable because you need to have power to keep it going. If you turn off the power, you lose all the memory. But now, Viking is making a DIMM chip of RAM that has solid-state memory built into it. So it has a flash memory backup attached to the RAM chip. This is great for server applications, but that's because they were the only ones who wanted it and are willing to pay for it. But it could have interesting consumer applications down the line when they're cheap enough and small enough to get into a desktop or laptop PC.
Yeah, so it's one of those kind of things where you have to wait for people to do something with it that is interesting.
Yeah, this is not ready for the end user quite yet, but network administrators who run servers are jumping at the chance to try this.
All right, and with that, let's turn off our afterburners, and we've only got a couple of the end user stories this week, but you've got a good one. I thought that this would be mine, but you've got a Raspberry Pi story for us.
Yeah, well, you're the only one of us who owns a Raspberry Pi, but I've been following this particular application really closely because it's really interesting to me that someone was able to take the Raspberry Pi and turn it into an AirPlay streaming device, not just for audio, but for video. Now, a couple of people have a couple of different implementations of this, but this is the best one so far. Basically, if you don't know anything about computers or how they work, you can order a Raspberry Pi, follow this guide, and have a working AirPlay streaming device for $35, you know, plus supplemental cost of connectors and cables in a day or two.
Yeah, and it's really a really cool device. It's just a $35 computer that can do what this thing does is absolutely incredible.
Yeah, And the fact that someone's got it to work with this proprietary Apple technology is pretty exciting.
Yeah, well, that's what happens when you open things, right? So this thing runs Linux, and there are some very dedicated people that are working on this device in particular, and this is bound to happen when you have a platform that's as open as this. Basically, everything but the GPU on this device is open in one way or another. And it's running Linux, and you can run whatever Linux software you want that's compatible with ARM, and this includes the distro of XBMC that's called RaspBMC is the Linux distro that was used in this case. So great things happen when you have cheap open computing devices, and this is one of them. Really neat. I'll have to try this out. I'll have to give it a whirl and see if it's as easy as you say it is.
Right. Well, my next story this week, my green tech story for the week, I guess. It's not particularly green, but it's a little green. There is a new piece of software from Asus, the hardware manufacturer, that makes mostly netbooks and laptops. So they're calling it the iCharger, AI, and it's Windows software that can charge a tablet or some phones up to 50% faster than standard USB charging. So you install the software on your Windows PC.
What?
And it charges your tablet faster. I don't know how it does it. I don't know how that works. I mean, I know technically how it works. They manage to tell the computer to send extra electricity through the USB port. But I don't understand Windows as it works now well enough to know exactly how they did that. Now, my initial reaction was, this is bunk. There's no way they actually do that. And one of our chat room members has just said the same thing. It sounds like nonsense, but it's been tested, and it's true. Install this software on your PC, and it will charge your tablet faster.
Yeah, I wonder if it's not about whether it's faster or not, but maybe some of the magnitude of the claim is exaggerated a little bit. So, and I also wonder if, you know, if it's not about overvolting it, but somehow like tuning it or something in a way that makes sense for that particular kind of device and the way it charges, but not necessarily like overvolting the USB port or anything like that. But
well, it doesn't overvolt it. It's still 5 volts, but it sends a greater amperage charge.
Right.
So it won't be like the iPhone or the iPad wall charger that can put 10 to 12 volts into it at a time.
Right.
At a proprietary level of amperage, but it is faster, and it is up to 50% faster.
Well, that's madness. I can't imagine what they're doing to make this happen. So very cool.
They send more amps through the USB port.
Is it that simple?
No, it's definitely not that simple, but that's all that I can tell you about how they do it.
All right, well, let's move into our tip of the week. As usual, you have us covered. What do you got for us?
All right, so I have a link in here from Lifehacker that I found because I was trying to find something to send to the two different people who asked me this week about what was the best way to clear up space on their iPad. So there's an easy way to do it in iPads and iPhones, which I've known about for a long time, and I think I've mentioned on the show before, but since I was asked so frequently, so recently, I'm going to reiterate. If you open up your iOS device and you go into the settings and you press usage. First you go to the general tab and then you press usage. It'll give you a list of storage. Now you have to wait anywhere from 5 to 25 seconds depending on how much you have on your device and how fast it is. But it'll give you a list of apps by memory used, and you can actually click on each app and delete individual pieces. Like, for example, if I go into Safari, I can clear my cookies or my offline reading list. If I go into music, I can delete my music. If I go into Facebook, I can delete the information that Facebook has on this stored on the phone without deleting the Facebook app itself. Now, if you're running an Android device, you can download an app from the Google Play Store called Clean Master, and it's free, and it sort of does the same thing. It's nice because it has a few more diagnostic features, but it essentially tells you how much of your phone memory is being used by what, and it gives you the option to back it up, clean it up, or uninstall it.
Yeah, so this sounds I ran out of space on my phone not too long ago, and
what do you do on Windows Phone?
Well, so on the 8X in particular, you do nothing because the storage is not replaceable. There's no SD card, and you just have to remove stuff.
Right, but how do you remove stuff? That's what I'm talking about right now.
Oh, you
how use... like what's the best way to just look at what's on the phone and delete it?
You can uninstall things from the marketplace. It's not as slick as this, I'll tell you right now. You can uninstall things from the marketplace, in particular games. And then
is there anything that tells you, like it gives you a list of apps and tells you how much space they're using?
Yes, but I don't believe they make it terribly easy from that screen to uninstall it.
All right. Well, I'm assuming most of our listeners who have Windows phones have probably figured out how to do that by now.
And the easiest way to do it is to just hook it up to a computer and manage what, like, music and videos and stuff are on there.
There's no way that's the easiest way. That is always the worst way.
I'm telling you, that's the easiest way. You can do it from the device. And uninstalling applications is easy on the device, but managing and deleting music from the device in particular is way easier from the computer.
Takes me back to 2008 and my first iPhone.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah, things were difficult back then. Thank God I live in the future.
All right, well, let's get into you've also got us covered for an app pick of the week, and this one is very cool.
Yeah, this one is a screensaver program for Windows and OS X that syncs up with Instagram. So if you're a big Instagram user or you just like seeing, I don't know, celebrity photos or something, if you used Instagram for anything or you just like Instagram, you can set up just a nice little mosaic of Instagram photos as your screensaver. It's pretty simple, and it's got a bunch of options. Like you can set specific tags to automatically load. I know that I don't use Instagram enough. I don't have enough Instagram friends to see something different every day. So I might want to set some tags of things that are interesting to me that Instagram will just comb through and Screenstagram will pop up onto my screensaver. It's pretty cool.
So
that's it. It's not that complicated.
I like the idea of what is happening here. But as you know, I'm not the biggest fan of Instagram. I really don't see why Instagram is interesting to people. But people love it. So
not everybody is just putting old-timey photo filters on their pictures.
That's mostly what I see. Well, I guess you're right. I'm sure there are some really actually tasteful photos on Instagram.
I don't think it's about tastefulness. I mean, I'm no expert to tell you what Instagram is really for. But I like it because it's just it's a random photo stream of a strange cross-section of my friends.
I don't know. There is a third-party Windows Phone app. Maybe I should give it a try.
Well, you know what I'm going to give a try? Making mathematical equations that draw pictures of celebrities.
Yeah, this is really cool. So we're getting into our last story of the week, and there's plenty of celebrities on here. I thought it was only Albert Einstein at first, but there's a lot of folks on here who you can draw.
Right. So Wolfram Alpha has a secret collection of mathematical equations that draw a line that creates a likeness of a random celebrity. They have Einstein, Obama, Tupac, Sergey Brin, and many others.
So Wolfram Alpha is always rolling out these kind of like weird Easter egg features like this. And, you know, it's just something that happens when you have a graph engine that is as powerful as they have on the web there.
Right. And the coolest thing is that you can run a filter that will create one of these equations for you. So if you don't see whichever picture of a person that you're looking for, Wolfram Alpha will help you do it. So we've got a link in the show notes that will take you to an article that explains it on Ars Technica, and you can, from there, you can find the gallery of strange single-line drawing portraits of celebrities.
Strange mathematical drawings of celebrities.
Right.
Nice. All right. Well, I think that will do it for this week. Taylor, if somebody wanted to contact you somehow over this medium called the internet, perhaps through Twitter, how would they go about doing that?
Well, perhaps they would log onto their computer and perhaps they would create a Twitter account. Perhaps they would just start spamming people randomly until they got to me.
It doesn't sound very effective.
It doesn't, but I think it answers your question effectively.
Yeah, I suppose it does. They would eventually get to you. It might take a millennia or so.
Do you think they would get to you first or me first? Probably me. My screen name is my Twitter handle is shorter than yours.
Yeah, exactly right. Yep, it would be you.
Right, okay. So my Twitter handle, just for reference, I know you didn't ask, Chris, but just in case somebody wanted to know, it's at TaylorPhone.
Yeah, just in case you don't want to spend a millennia spamming random Twitter accounts.
It wouldn't take that long. There's not that many people on Twitter.
Actually, I wonder. We'll have to do a calculation. We'll come back with that next week, maybe. So if you wanted to get at me, I am at Chris Hailbarn. So give us both a follow. Let us know what you think of the show. Let us know what you think we can do better about the show. That will do it for this week. So thank you for listening. And of course, you can find more information, including the show notes, at thedigitalmediazone.com under the end user. That's THENDUSR. The DMZ has a few other podcasts that you can listen to. Have a listen to Entertainment 2.0, Scene in HD, and the Movie Podcast. You can send us some more detailed feedback at our email, that is theenduser@thedigitalmediazone.com, or you can follow us on Twitter. Together, we are at @theenduser. You can join us live in the chat room as we record the show live every Monday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. I am your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I'm Taylor Marr.
Thanks for listening, folks. We will see you next week. Bye-bye.